From Coral Springs High School in sunny Broward County, Florida, the name of this podcast is Pulled Up. Here we go. Welcome to Pulled Up, the podcast where Coral Springs High School teachers talk about the films that pull them up so they can come in and pull up our students every single day. I'm your host, Russell Aronson. I'm the Cambridge School Support Coordinator at Coral Springs High School. Behind the cameras and on the boards, we have Mr. John Place, our illustrious TV production teacher. And our host for today is Ms. Rita Dare, who is our ceramics teacher. Welcome, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I'm glad you're happy to be here. I think this is going to be good stuff. We've got great stuff to talk about today. In this first segment, we talk about how you got into ceramics, how you got into teaching. So we're going to back up with ceramics first. So tell us how you got into ceramics or art or both.
Okay. Well, way back in the day, I was actually a nursing major at FAU, and I wasn't really too happy with that choice, but I thought that's what I had to do because my mom was a nurse. And so one day, one of my friends invited me to come along and just try out the pottery wheel in one of her electives. And so I joined her, and I was like, wow, I need to take this course. Actually, I need to switch my major. So at the time, it seemed like a really great idea to go from nursing to ceramics.
Yeah, you know, such a another sure thing industry.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
Make good money.
Totally logical. And so I did that.
What was it about the pottery wheel and the ceramics that kind of drew you in, do you think?
I think probably for me, since I didn't really have any, ironically, any art classes when I was in high school, I had one semester of photography, which was not really anything too exciting. Okay. And then before that, in middle school, I didn't have any art because I've always been in Catholic school my whole life. So I was very hungry for like an art class. So ironically, the first time I had art in a long time was in college.
And so you took multiple courses then, you really got into it. What was kind of that moment when you were taking the classes where you're like, yeah, I think this is my life now?
It wasn't like really a specific turning point other than just the invitation from the friend and just seeing everybody on the wheel. And I was like, I can do that. And I really couldn't, but that's what kept me going in there and practicing and late nights, you know, a package of Doritos for dinner from the vending machine and whatever.
So just life. Taking advantage of the college experience of having all that time,
right,
and having that passion and just having a little bit of access to that technology.
Exactly. And just being with other like weird people. It was nice.
Okay. So the community thing.
Yeah.
Big thing.
Very different.
And I think once we get to the student questions, we're going to see that that's something that you're perpetuating in the classroom, I think, as well. Okay, so you get a degree in art, and then what happens?
Well, okay, so this was in 99 that I graduated, and at the time, this was before graphic design, really, it was kind of a buzzword that no one really ever heard of, and so me and the other hands-on, you know, art majors like pottery and painters, we would always make fun of the graphic designers and be like, that's not really art. You know, what are you doing with your life? And then after I graduated, I realized, oh, that's actually the turning point of where all art is going, you know, to computers. And the joke was on me, but it didn't matter because I was, you know, I got married right at the end of college and I had my kids right away. So I didn't really have a plan on what I was going to do with anything at the moment. So didn't matter.
Just following the passion. letting it happen.
Just blowing in the wind.
That's nice. Yeah. Scary, but nice too. Yeah.
I don't do that anymore.
Well, since you're a teacher now, obviously not. So how did you make that transition then into education?
Well, I would say when I had my kids when I was young. My first kid, I was about 21 when she was born, and then I had another one a few years later and another one a couple years after that. So here I was, like, maybe 27 years old, and I realized, oh, I'm going to have to pay for these kids to get an education. So I ended up kind of, I don't even know how exactly it happened, but next thing I knew, at a school right down the street, they had an art teacher position, like, opening up, because the lady that was teaching it was going to be leaving, so she kind of mentored me as far as teaching, not as far as art, because she was a performing arts major, so she didn't know as much about studio art as I did, because that's my background.
Right.
So, yeah, just becoming, needing to fill that need for my kids, to be able to work with them. I didn't want to separate myself from them when they were so small. So I thought that's a nice way to be able to go to work with my kids and be their art teacher.
That's so cool because, you know, lots of challenges to this profession. But there are also these benefits that a lot of people miss. And one of those, I think, is that ability to kind of keep family together and focus on family still. So
exactly.
That's really cool. So you get your first job. And what were the first couple years like? Do you remember those years? Were they good? Were they tough? Any memorable moments from there?
I think that I didn't really anticipate the positive way that kids would respond to me. Like, I just kind of was just doing my thing. I'm more of a laid-back personality in the classroom. And the kids I would find that they wouldn't want to leave my room, or they couldn't wait to come back. And that was the most exciting part of their day, was, you know, having art. And so, I don't know, I guess that kind of pleasantly surprised me, you know, that they responded to me that way.
And what do you think about the way things went on in your room contributed to the fact that they wanted to stay there then? Since you say, well, I'm kind of laid back, you weren't saying, hey, come look at this. It was
right. I tried to create, like, just kind of a happy vibe in the classroom, just like music and just a lot of forgiveness and, oh, you made a little mistake. Well, it's not really a big deal. Let's try to, you know, see if we can work around it, fix it. Just kind of my personality, you know, of not being a real overbearing person. I can't stand micromanagement, and I don't do that to other people as well.
Sounds very art-focused, definitely, to me. And I want to go back to you saying about the mistakes, because I've noticed, especially in more recent years, that students kind of get thrown even more when they make mistakes. Is this something that you've seen more recently, or do you think this has been consistent for you? Or you can just talk about mistakes and art.
Well, I think because as an artist and an art teacher, you're always in problem-solving mode, so you always see how small problems are. And students kind of tend to see how big they are, but you know, like, because you've had to live through trusting the process for so many years, you know it's going to work out, it's going to be fine. So you just see, you just see everything differently. You don't really see it as a mistake, just like a little opportunity to have a learning moment down the road.
Happy accidents.
Yes.
All right. That's pretty cool. So then you've been here at Coral Springs High for?
I will be starting my fourth year in the fourth quarter.
Starting your fourth year in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
So, I gotta say, what was it like to start in the middle of the year? Was that any challenge?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, and actually, this was right during the pandemic, so I had the pleasure of teaching online pottery. I mean, it doesn't get any more ironic than that.
Tell me about online pottery.
Well,
not that we want to go too far down the rabbit hole of going back to COVID.
Right.
Because we all kind of freak out, but tell me about online pottery.
So basically, I had to have, like, adaptations for a project idea, because some, you know, some kids would only have access to paper at home. So I would have a drawing, you know, they could draw something that they would make in clay if they had clay. But then, of course, there was always those kids who would go to Michael's and have, you know, whatever budget they wanted. They could have air-dry clay, and they wanted to make little pots. And so I would try to teach to all the different, you know, skill levels and, you know, materials that kids had to work with. So just extremely flexible.
Extremely flexible.
Yeah.
Really. So then how did you, like, try to keep things consistent with all the different kids who are doing all this different stuff?
Well, that's always a challenge, you know, in any creative setting. I think the theme would be the only thing that would tie everything together. And then there was just a million directions that things could go in. And I like that. I like when things are kind of all over the place, because that's kind of how life is.
Yeah. So that sounds like definitely the philosophical approach to teaching and life for you. And I think definitely in a minute when we get to the film, it certainly links into that quite well. I know that you recently with Ms. Zangri had a big show for us, and I'd love you to kind of talk about that a little behind the scenes. Tell us about the show and what you were trying to achieve with the show.
Okay. So that was in Ms. Zangri's classroom. And so she has a lot of big ideas, and I'm more of a realist in some of those things. So I kind of try to, like, rein it in a little bit, because I don't want to have, like, a massive undertaking that might not pan out the way we want in the time frame. So she did all the murals and stuff like that, and we tried to coordinate this under the sea theme. And so she had paper mache sculptures and murals, everything like you could have possibly imagined. And we had the black lights, and everything's glowing, and jellyfish, anything that moves, you know, under the sea was incorporated. And so the thing I wanted to contribute, I wanted to do something that I knew I could count on, that I knew I could make it work in a short period of time, because I didn't want to start it too early. Because it's not my classroom. So I knew it had to be something I could take down and put in kind of quickly, like maybe within a week.
Yeah.
So we did the coral sculptures, because I knew that would turn out.
Yeah, the coral sculptures were really neat. And obviously nobody here in this podcast can see that. Maybe we'll be able to drop some pictures in the podcast when we edit in.
Should have brought some in here.
We'll put some in, because also, of course, Ms. Zangri will be a guest on episode 4. So we'll circle back around to that. We'll make sure we get those photos in. So I think what that does is it takes up to where you're at now. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about a non-Oscar winning but still important film, Nacho Libre.
Yes. Yes. Should have gotten an Oscar for sure.
Yeah, well, I'll let you make the case for that shortly. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back to talk about Nacho Libre.
Bien. Sing at the party. Everyone is dancing. Happy party. But Ramses is not dancing. He does not dance at the parties. Ramses number one. He knows the secrets of desire. Ramses is the one. He puts the people all on fire.
And we're back with Ms. Dare, and we are in the second segment of Pulled Up, where we talk about the film that pulls them up. And the choices that all the teachers made have been so vastly different. And it was so exciting when Ms. Dare sent me an email back, and she said, well, I chose two films. And one was The Hobbit, and we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. But I could not resist having a serious discussion about the 2006 epic film with Jack Black, Nacho Libre. And because I am a media studies teacher and an inveterate film geek, I had to do a deep dive on this. So this is the point where I kind of geek out for about 2 minutes and talk about the film, because that's what I do. And I am trying to advertise for media studies because it's cool. So Nacho Libre, 2006, directed by Jared Hess. Now, he was most famous before this for a film called Napoleon Dynamite.
Another masterpiece.
And one of the things I'm hoping we're going to get to in this is maybe we'll be able to put a finger on why these are such good films. Because like other films, like we were talking in the previous podcast about Tenet and Christopher Nolan and Oppenheimer, and these films are masterpieces for perhaps direct and obvious reasons. But I think it's really hard to point out the quality of these films. We're going to try and put a finger on that. So that's Jared Hess. His most recent film, which I have not seen, is called Muscles and Mayhem. He did a documentary about American Gladiators that came out last year. Did you see it?
I did.
How was it?
Oh, I watched part one.
You watched part one?
Yeah.
Okay. We may have to talk about that. That's good. And of course, I saw that his newest project is he's making a movie based on Minecraft the game, starring Jason Momoa.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, right? That's exactly like all these other films. Not at all. So the other thing that's interesting is the co-writer and co-director of all his films is his wife, Jerusha Hess. So they've worked together on almost everything, as well as the writer, Mike White, who wrote two of the three Pitch Perfect films and White Lotus, a TV show that's been popular lately. And he also wrote School of Rock, which had Jack Black in it, which is another pretty good film, although it's missing something for me that these films have. And we'll talk about that. I do want to say music. Now, apparently the music's by Danny Elfman, but it isn't. And there was an argument about that. It was supposed to be by Beck. And everybody's like, Beck can't make music for this, but more Beck music is in this than Danny Elfman, but there you go. And the cinematographer and a bunch of the people who worked on the crew and a bunch of the actors are all from Mexico, working in Mexican film and TV, which is what the Hesses are kind of known for. Wherever they make a film, most of the people working on the film are people who live locally around that. They don't just come in, bring in all their folks and then leave, which is neat because that means that they kind of build the economy where they're at instead of just kind of leaving it blank. Mm. Okay, and then obviously we have Jack Black, who we'll talk about more later, and Ana de la Reguera, who didn't get a lot of roles after this, but she was recently in a film called Army of the Dead. I believe that's a Zack Snyder flick that was popular there. So, keeping all that aside, let's talk a little bit about Nacho Libre. And I've got so many good quotes from you about Nacho Libre. And so my first one is, I can relate to the main character as someone who tries to take their job seriously, but has other sides of themselves that are not understood by society and struggles to fit in anywhere. So can you elaborate on that? Like, talk about, especially within Nacho Libre, what makes you feel like that?
Okay. Well, I don't know. I guess just kind of being an art teacher, being in the art world, and realizing that you're different, you're weird in a good way. You'd like to think it's a good way. And sometimes maybe even in that circle, just feeling a little bit like you don't blend, you don't mesh with anyone, anywhere, anyway, and that's okay.
And it's okay.
Yeah,
and that's probably the most persistent thing about Nacho Libre is, and by the way, I did this in Tenet, although I think it's less important with Nacho Libre. But spoiler alert, we're going to talk about things that happen later in the film. So if you haven't seen Nacho Libre, hey, press pause and go watch Nacho Libre. What are you doing with your life? Yeah. You need to go watch Nacho Libre. I don't know what to tell you.
You haven't lived.
There you go. You haven't lived. So right from the beginning, he's this guy as a kid who doesn't fit in. And it never changes. And so often in these Hollywood films, it changes after a while. And we're like, okay, the reason why the character is successful is because the character learns how to fit in. That never happens in Nacho Libre.
Right.
I mean, not even at the very end.
Right. It's always awkward. And that's more realistic in life.
Yes. And that's one of the things I like about it. Like, he gets that hero's journey thing, and that's why I thought it was so interesting you put this in The Hobbit, because The Hobbit, of course, is the quintessential hero's journey, right? But normally we get the hero's journey, they learn, and then they have this moment, and they gain this knowledge, and they're super powerful. But Nacho Libre, he goes and climbs the cliff to get the egg, and yeah, it doesn't go well.
No, but in his mind, it's always successful. So he kind of has an air of narcissism, too, but it's not harmful.
Not harmful narcissism.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. So there's this ego here, mm-hmm, but it's like it's healthy.
Right.
It drives him, but it's not this negative thing.
Exactly.
Okay. So I want to kind of back up and say, so this is a film that you watch to feel better. Mm-hmm. And so when you first think of Nacho Libre, what scene pops up at you more than any other? What's the first thing you think?
Probably the scene where he's wearing the monk's robe and the stretchy pants in his room for fun.
For fun, yeah. When no one else is looking.
Well, that's actually, he thought no one else was looking, but that's when the kid walked by.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
And that's the first giveaway there. And so that kind of gets me to the next quote from you, where you said the message is to not take yourself or others so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a theme with what you've been talking about. Is this something, it seems like also this is a part of what your success in the classroom is too. So, like, how do you bring that message into the classroom? I'm just curious about that.
Well, I kind of feel like it's not possible to make a fool of yourself. So just have fun and just say what you want to say and, you know, obviously respectfully. But just have fun. And if people think you're weird, whatever. It's their problem.
If people think you're weird, it's their problem.
Their problem.
You heard it here first, kids. I think we got to put that on a T-shirt.
Yes.
Now, one of the next things, and you've kind of already alluded to this with your upbringing and schooling, but you said as someone who was raised a devout Catholic, it pokes fun at how hard we try to be compliant and holy and how pathetic we actually are.
Right.
So what do you think this film's relationship is to religion or faith or anything that
I think comes with it? The underlying message is that we take everything in life too seriously and that we're all, and I don't mean in a mean way, but we're all failures, you know, on some level. Like we'll never achieve perfection and that's all right.
It's A-okay.
It's fine. Yeah.
And so, you know, it takes us back to what you're talking about in the classroom with the pottery and everything else and
exactly,
and the happy accidents. And what I liked about the movie is he doesn't, he every time you think, oh, we're going to get to that point where now he's good at it and he's winning, and he doesn't. And no one tells him that. His best friend, his partner, no, tells him, you know, you're terrible.
Exactly.
And then the final match, he just backs into it because the other guys got run over, and he really just gets lucky. And that's probably his only big win, right? That's something that just, you know, a lot of the other films, it's like that Rocky thing. And you're like, all right, that's it. Now you're the champ, kid. And instead here, it's like, no, I think that story pretty much ends right there.
Exactly. It's kind of like The Office humor a little bit.
How so?
Well, like the main character. I'm blocking on his name. I can't remember his name.
I'm
but anyway,
blanking out too. It's all right.
You know who I mean. The boss.
Yeah.
Like it's cringy. It's awkward. And in his mind, he thinks he's very well respected and he takes himself very seriously, but it's harmless narcissism again. So I feel like there's kind of a connection in that kind of, like, it's just hard to watch as an audience member, but it makes you pull for them as the underdog.
Yeah, so it's that push-pull in those two different directions.
Exactly.
And so you got, well, this guy's kind of an idiot.
And he grows on you.
Yeah, yeah. And isn't that true of so many people in our lives?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You also, and then, of course, your last comment about this is that laughter is the key to a happy and successful life. It does not just enhance life. It is life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an opportunity to watch a movie, it's, I guess, probably going to be a comedy then?
Yeah. I like comedy, or I like the fantasy genre where it just takes you away. I also like documentaries too. I think they can be interesting, but yeah, I don't like chick flicks or anything like that.
Not a problem with that.
That's me.
And that gives me a good transition so we can talk about The Hobbit for a minute, because I wanted to make sure we did that. So then tell me what you like about The Hobbit.
Well, I think obviously the landscape, the setting of the movie is very, it's just such a fantasy world, and it's so different than Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it's so beautiful. Not that Florida isn't. Well, I guess it isn't. But yeah, just the whole, I think that just it's, the effects are so amazing. And then there's such a contrast between like small characters and big landscapes where they live, and like that's their world. And it's just, it's kind of true to life in a way.
That you're just this kind of tiny piece of all this bigger stuff
exactly.
going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you were talking about The Hobbit, you talked about, you know, being home versus going on journeys. Can you build on that idea for me?
Well, I kind of feel like maybe in my journey of teaching and, you know, motherhood and all that, like, you just kind of want to be a homebody and you want to be able to relax and rest and not be stressed out. But in life, that's not really reality. You're kind of forced to get up and go on adventures and challenge yourself and, you know, go places you didn't want to go and just kind of make the best of it.
So you got to have both, right?
Yes.
And and I love that when you were talking about it, was that push-pull kind of thing, how it's sort of understandable that we want to be home and we want to be comfortable and be around loved ones, but that can't last. And actually, you should put yourself out there and try different stuff anyway. It makes you appreciate coming home again.
It does.
So, of course, I have to ask, so, like, what for you might have been, like, one of the biggest leaps for you, your biggest journey or your biggest leap?
My biggest leap?
We didn't prepare for this question.
Oh, biggest leap.
I know, biggest leap. I know.
Probably having 3 kids in a short time span and then getting a job and then later on getting my master's degree and just, I don't know, just piling it all on, having 2 dogs, and just, why not? Life's an adventure. Why not?
I'm so glad. Yeah, I think having 3 kids is a leap. Yeah, yeah. So that is,
they're all girls.
Huge. And they're all girls.
Yes.
What are the ages? And I don't know. You don't have to ask me. I don't know.
Well, my youngest is going to be 19 in April. And then I have a 20, almost 21-year-old and a almost, got to do the math, 24-year-old.
Wow.
So I'm kind of like out of that a little bit. They're all older, so that's nice.
So it's a different stage right now.
Yeah.
A different leap.
Yes, thank you.
Well, anything else that you wanted to like point out about either film, stuff that you wanted to say about either film?
Well, I guess I would say I like The Hobbit better than Lord of the Rings because I feel like Lord of the Rings is just one epic battle after another with the whole likely hero type of, you know, plot. And that's why I like The Hobbit, is because it's the same thing. It's like he's like a little hobbit who doesn't really have any skills, doesn't really have any qualities that would make him a leader or able to defeat, you know, scary monsters and stuff like that. But he still, he tries, and somehow it all comes together and he succeeds.
I got to completely agree with you. When I was reading the books for the first time, and I came late to it, I was in master's school and I took a sci-fi lit course, sci-fi fantasy lit course. And we had to read all four books in a week. And I don't remember anything else from that week. It was a long week. The Hobbit was the one that stood out for me. And it's the one that I didn't wind up skipping pages on because that character was so approachable and so relatable. And it kind of brought the scale down to something that I felt like, okay, I can understand.
Yeah, more relatable,
this.
More human.
Yeah. Ironically, you know, more human by using people who weren't human to try to say this is what human is. That's great. I think that is a fitting place to draw to a close our conversation about film. So we're going to take one more little break. And when we come back, you get to answer questions from your students.
Oh, great.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute.
When the fantasy has ended and all the children are gone, something good inside me helps me to carry on. I ate some bugs, I ate some grass, I used my hand to wipe my tears, to kiss your mouth, I break my vow. No, 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 Jose. Unless you want to, then we break our vows together. Encarnación, 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 Encarnación.
They are ready for you now.
And we're back one more time with Ms. Dare, and we are in our final phase of the podcast where we're going to talk about questions from Ms. Dare's students, which is always interesting. So we have a question from Daniela, and she would like to know your favorite thing and least favorite thing about being a teacher.
Okay, so my favorite thing is just being able to laugh and kind of be silly in the classroom and make other people happy and just sharing in the happiness, I think. That's my favorite thing. I really enjoy working with kids. And my least favorite thing is when it has to come to an end, when I have to send them off in graduation and really not see them ever again. So I cope with that by encouraging them to be an art teacher so that someday they can work here.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. I never tell anybody to become an English teacher. So that's really good. I should.
You really should.
I really should. Maybe we'll actually get one or two of those going ahead. All right. That's very sweet. That's very nice. So we have a second question from Sarah. And I think we already talked about it. She wanted to know a little bit more about why you chose this as a career. And I know we talked about this a little bit. Do you feel like there's an element of this that maybe we didn't cover? Or we talked about kind of from the art side, but what about from maybe the teaching side?
So kind of what I was saying before, I had no plan. I just kind of dove in, got my Bachelor of Fine Arts in Studio Art and Ceramics, and never thought about teaching until I had my kids and they were a little bit like school age. And I was like, okay, well, realistically, the only way you can make money with an art degree is by teaching or being a famous artist. So that was not an option for me. So I kind of backtracked and I got my education courses so I could get the teaching certification. And that is how I got into teaching.
That reminds me of another question that I had that came up before. And when you have something that you love, like ceramics, and then that's your job every day, what do you do to enjoy ceramics on your own and build it on your own when it's not part of work? How do you divide that?
Okay. Well, one of the things I do is that I don't ever force myself to do it.
Okay.
Same with exercise. Just don't force. Just don't.
I like.
But I do, like, if I'm feeling creative, I do have a wheel at home, and I even have a kiln at home, and I got clay, and I got tools. So if I feel like it, because that's how creativity is, you can't force it. It has to come naturally. So if I'm feeling in a creative mood and I want to go on the wheel, I will throw, that's the term, like when you're on the wheel, outside with nature in my garden like a hobbit.
I see.
Yeah.
All the pieces are coming together here, folks.
It really does.
This wasn't planned at all. This is exactly how the entire podcast comes together.
Right.
It's not an English teacher planning the whole thing. Okay, so how often does that happen, or is it just like completely random?
It's random.
Yeah.
And like in the summer, I might get more chances. It doesn't happen very often, but I kind of like to do projects around the house and stuff like that too. So it's kind of creative, and of course, gardening.
Yeah.
I love planting things and all that. So it's kind of, it's, you know, playing with dirt.
Playing with dirt.
One way or another.
All right. That brings it down to its basis.
Exactly.
All right. I like that. We have time for one more question, and I think we kind of relates to this. Brianna asks how you got so good at pottery and drawings.
Okay.
How'd you get good at it, quote unquote?
Well, that's a good question. I think, because I really don't get a lot of time to practice clay, but from helping others and trying to help them work through their mistakes, it's sharpened my ability to problem solve for myself. So even though I might not get on the wheel maybe once a quarter, when I do, I've been kind of helping people like all school year, centering the clay and all that. So when I go to do it for myself, it's like no effort.
So then you can just jump right into it, and the artistic part of it is more immediate because
exactly.
You're not caught up in some of those basic elementary pieces
exactly.
That you've got to get to.
Yeah.
Because I did, my wife and I took a pottery class like a couple months ago, and I was like just trying to get it centered on the wheel.
Yeah. It's like ice skating. The pros make it look easy, but it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, okay, so yeah, that's really interesting. And I think, again, that brings us around to kind of all the elements here that we've been talking about the whole time. The practice, the creativity, and not sweating the mistakes.
No.
At all.
Exactly. I try to tune as much out of life as I possibly can, just enough to be coherent and function. Everything else, out the door.
That's great. Just narrow the stream. I think that's fantastic. So as we wrap up, do you have anything either like going on in your classes, outside of your classes, that you wanted to highlight, talk about, promote?
Well, we are kind of coordinating a little bit with Mrs. Krantz, and we will be having some Shrek sculptures that will be ready for next week, fingers crossed, for the glass cabinet in the lobby of the auditorium. So looking forward to that.
That's so cool. So just extending that whole theater experience, bringing the arts back together. I love that. I'm going to look forward to that. Everybody, probably by the time you hear this, it'll already be over, but maybe we'll have some photos of that for you too.
Hopefully.
And I want to thank you so much for being on the program.
Anytime.
And I hope you had a good time.
I did.
And I want to thank everybody for listening, and I want to... that's right. I have to thank people. I have to make sure that I'm doing that. So let me go ahead and thank some people. So this has been Pulled Up, co-production of the Coral Springs High School ACE Media Studies program and the Coral Springs High School TV production program. Special thanks to Mr. Place for producing the show in this beautiful recording studio. I have to also give shout-outs to special thanks to Dr. Tamika King for helping me pull all of this together and creating the opportunity for it to happen, for her sage wisdom and support. I want to thank retired Principal Vivian Suarez for green-lighting this the first time, and new principal, Mr. Dixon, Mr. Dwayne Dixon, for green-lighting it again, just to make sure everybody was happy with it. The podcast logo was designed by ACE Media Studies students Brendan Kenny and Vanessa Ramshall. And I would like to thank the faculty, staff, and administration of Coral Springs High School for pulling the students up every day. Until next time, thanks for listening. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are. See you next time.
Pull me up, pull me up, 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 up.